Hey, everybody, it's Jason, and you're probably asking yourself, hey, where's the opening sketch? These things always open with an opening sketch. Well, I had plans for an opening sketch. I mean, I pulled music. I pulled this music and everything. I wrote a script. Steve and I read the script. It was all great. And then I got Steve's audio feed. And it's awful. See, Steve accidentally recorded on a different microphone than his regular microphone, and it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And so it wasn't good for the sketch. And I tried to fix it as much as I could. And I'm just warning you guys that the audio quality on today's episode isn't that great. So, but it's still funny. I mean, we're the same guys still doing the jokes. It's just that Steve sounds like he's in a submarine crammed into a tin can shouting out of R2-D2's butt. So, just a heads up. So, thanks for listening, and next time we'll do better. We'll do better, I promise. Start the projector!
It seems you burnt the wrong village.
They always say that, and what does it matter? A village betrays us, a village is burnt, the point's made.
Your point, their village.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Late Seating. I am Jason Harding.
And I'm Steve Shives.
And on this show, we take a classic movie and see if it lives up to its reputation, whether that reputation is good or bad. And this time around, its reputation is good, isn't it, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's quite good, yes.
It's quite good, but not very many people talk about it, except unless it's your mom or your grandma.
Boy,
right?
Ain't that the truth. Yeah, yeah. That has been my experience.
No one's trying to remake it. No one's showing it on TV. Maybe you watch it on a dare. Maybe it's a drinking game for you. We don't know, but we reviewed it. Why? Because Jason's got a hair up his butt about classic movies or something.
And because I picked B.
And because he picked B. So we watched all of it. We watched all of Dr. Zhivago. Well,
yes.
I did.
You
Steve
even watched the overture.
I watched the overture and the entr'acte. And
oh,
the
man. I was really hoping you would skip those.
And the get the fuck out of the movie theater music.
The leave music.
Yeah. So, Steve.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any trivia for this movie, Dr. Zhivago?
Dr. Zhivago.
That's right.
Despite the fact that everyone is clearly British, the film is set in Russia. That's not trivia.
No,
that's,
and also no. Not everyone is clearly British, are they, Steve?
That's true. There are a few that are
racist.
Not British. Finally, the terrible truth is revealed.
One of them is very much Egyptian, aren't they, Steve?
Yes.
Okay, then. Apologize to
he
the
doesn't
nice
even
people.
Is he even that important?
Well, let's see. The movie is told from his perspective, and he's the named character.
He's the title character, I guess.
We follow
okay.
him literally, almost literally from birth to death. So.
Okay, but it makes even less sense for an Egyptian guy to play a Russian guy than it makes for a British guy to play
a Russian
guy. That's
right. How come people are always complaining about whitewashing, but they're never talking about all those people from Egypt taking over the white guy's role?
Yeah, what about that, huh?
Sure, it's only happened once.
Once in 100 years of Hollywood? But come on! I actually do have a little bit of trivia.
Oh, yay!
So, Rod Steiger, who plays one of the key roles in this, he plays Komarovsky, which we'll get around to, took a couple of liberties with Julie Christie.
You think?
Yeah, in two scenes. The first is the scene where their characters have their first kiss, where Steiger, while they were shooting it, forcibly French kissed Julie Christie, which she did not see coming and did not consent to or whatever. He just kind of forced it on her. And then the second time was during the scene where her character slaps his character. And as scripted, it was just her character. It was just Lara slapping Komarovsky. But in the scene as they shot it, after she slaps him, he slaps her back.
Yeah.
Which again, was not in the script. And they did not go over beforehand.
No, he really slapped her.
He just slapped her. So I just want to say, actors and directors, just a plea from a movie watcher. Don't do that.
Yeah. Here's one of my take on it. Rod Steiger is a human garbage bag. And just because he acts good doesn't mean you should cast him in a movie.
Yeah, and just like there's this whole, it's not nearly as prevalent now, thankfully, but back in the day there was this bullshit like macho director deal where like, oh, we abuse the actors to get good performances out of them.
Yeah, there's a reason why Rod Steiger didn't get much work until he was too old to do anything.
Ooh.
Like, I'm gonna slap that lady, and he'd take 15 minutes to walk across, and by that point he forgot what he was gonna do.
Rod?
Just act crazy when we turn on the camera, Rod. Just, that's it.
Okay.
Where's my money? That's great, Rod.
Where's my money?
Anything else?
Yeah, one more. Okay. I thought was just one of those interesting things. David Lean, of course, the director of the film, was not actually a fan of the score, which, of course, went on to become one of the most beloved aspects of the
part
film.
Part of it was, yeah.
Yeah, part of the main theme was. Yeah, mm-hmm. He apparently felt that it was too romantic.
Which is weird, because he wanted to make this movie because it was more romantic than adventurous from his last film, which was Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this epic romance.
Right.
And you thought the score was too romantic. Okay.
Okay, hey. Whatever, Rod. Okay, whatever,
you're,
David.
You're David Lean. Whatever.
You're Mr. Epic. Whatever, dude. I agree with him. Anyway, so you want to know who made it?
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
Okay, it was directed by David Lean. We've mentioned it before for Lawrence of Arabia. Directed Bridge Over the River Kwai.
They did a lot of stuff.
Produced by Carlo Ponti, who wanted to make a movie for his girlfriend. Who is his girlfriend? You'll find out later. Screenplay by Robert Bolt, who also wrote for Lawrence of Arabia and also Man for All Seasons later on.
Ah.
Based on Dr. Zhivago by Boris Pasternak. Now, the book is banned in Russia. They're like, no, we do not like book. You are bad men. People had heard about the book prior to World War II, and it really didn't get released until the 1950s, and it was a massive hit, and everyone loved it. And it's still banned. And I think he got a Nobel Prize for it, which he declined because he felt that he would get in trouble if he accepted the Nobel Prize.
You're only making it worse.
What did you do? You take Nobel Prize for book? We hate you more than ever.
Guys, you're killing me. Stop giving
double
me these
gulag. Double Siberia for you.
They're pissed at me enough already. Just
we have one kind of Siberia, which is pretty bad. Then we have Super Siberia, which is like five times worse than regular Siberia.
Double Siberia.
It's frozen garbage. It's an island of frozen garbage and dead bodies.
Super Siberia.
Anyway, starring Omar Sharif as Dr. Yuri Andreevich Zhivago. Now, as we have covered, Omar Sharif is from where, Steve?
Egypt.
He's not what, Steve? English.
British.
That's right.
Okay. Sorry, Omar.
But he was not the first choice. You want to know who was some of the people?
Who, please?
Well, Peter O'Toole.
Naturally.
He declined. Max von Sydow.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Paul Newman.
Oh, wow.
How do you go from Max von Sydow, and he goes, no, I'd rather not, to Paul Newman?
I can't imagine they got a lot of calls for the same part.
And last but not least, Michael Caine.
Oh, hello.
And while he was in testing with Julie Christie for the movie, he claims that he recommended that he do Omar Sharif. Is that true? No one knows, because Michael Caine might be getting a little cuckoo as he gets a little bit older, and he's just making shit up now. We don't know, because everybody else is dead, and Michael can make up whatever story he wants.
You know, I actually directed that film. David Lean just didn't show up one day, and I took over, and I finished it.
Julie Christie as Lara Anna Antipova. Oh, foreign names, why? Now, this movie was originally being developed by Carlo Ponti for his girlfriend, Sophia Loren.
Ah.
And then they cast Julie Christie.
And how did Sophia feel about that?
I don't know, because they got married and stay married, so I guess she was okay with it.
I guess she was cool with
Maybe he didn't tell her. It's like, oh, this will be such a great surprise.
They went to see the premiere, and she was like, wouldn't I have been good in this role?
No.
And he was sure.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, she would have been wonderful.
Carlo Ponti is an Italian movie producer, by the way. I forgot to mention that. I'm getting hiccups. I'm so excited. Geraldine
Chaplin.
You're
such a Carlos Ponti fanboy.
That's right. Geraldine Chaplin as Tanya Gromenko. Geraldine is most famous for coming out of the ball sack of Charlie Chaplin. That's not true. Don't. That's mean. She's more than just his daughter. She's also an actor, a singer, a dancer.
Yes.
You've seen her in other stuff. But guess who they wanted, and guess who they asked, they thought about. Guess.
Who? Angela Lansbury.
Audrey Hepburn.
Wow.
Yeah. Rod Steiger as Victor Ipolevich. Komorowski. That's a spoiler, everybody.
He's a bad man.
He's a very bad man. Guess who they wanted? Guess who they approached?
I don't know who.
They both turned it down. Marlon Brando.
Oh.
And James Mason.
Yeah. Okay.
I could see either one of them in that.
Yeah. Part. Yeah. I can see James Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Brando, both Steiger and Brando were both, you know, method actors.
Yeah.
So that kind of fits. Alec Guinness as Lieutenant General Yevgraf Andreevich Zhivago. And do I need to tell you what else? No, I don't. Do I need to tell him what else he's been? No, it's Alec Guinness.
I would hope not.
Tom Courtney. Tom Courtney as Pavel Pasha Antipov. Thank you, Antipov / Strelensikov. Dun dun dun. Way to give it away, credits.
Oh, God. Spoiler.
Guess who they wanted for him?
Who?
Albert Finney.
Oh, okay. I can kind of see that. Yeah,
I like the cast. I like Tom Courtney a lot. Tom Courtney is a great stage actor, and he's been in a lot of movies and stuff, but nothing super notable. I fell in love with him for a movie came out in the early 80s called The Dresser, which was the film version of a play by the same name. It was great. Siobhan McKenna as Anna Gromenko. Ralph Richardson as Alexander Maximosh Gromenko. And I love Ralph Richardson, but sometimes he just doesn't... He forgets that he's making a movie, and he goes back to the stage acting, and he looks around like he doesn't know where he is sometimes. I love Ralph Richardson a lot.
He's good.
And he's been in, a lot of movies. You'll remember him as God from Time Bandits, and as the, I remember him as the thug horde leader from Brave New World.
Oh, yeah.
Brave New World. Rita Tushingham as Tanya Kamarova / The Girl. And we'll get into that later. Jeffrey Rockland as Sasha. Tarek Sharif, Omar Sharif's son, as Yuri at the age of 8.
Nepotism.
Yeah, but I also was, before I found that out, I was watching the movie going, God damn, they found a kid that looks a lot like Omar Sharif.
I know. Wow.
It also explains why he's not a very good actor.
Damn.
And why they dubbed his voice in.
Oh, boy, did they ever.
With what it sounds like a 22-year-old woman.
Yeah, oh, my God, yes.
Pretending to be a little kid.
Yeah.
Bernard Kay as Keurig the Bolshevik. Klaus Kinski. As Kostoyand Amorisky. Now, that's the name from the book. He was not named in the movie, but he plays a prisoner. He is so perfectly cast in this role. And I don't know where they found him, how he got here so early. I didn't even know he was in this fucking movie. He's so goddamn young.
Yeah. I saw his name in the credits, and that's all I was waiting for the whole movie.
And he didn't disappoint either, did he?
I was like, oh, thank God Kinski's in this.
Gerard Tichy as Liberius, a Red Partisan commander. Noel Willman as Rosin. Jeffrey Keane as Professor Boris Kurt. Adrienne Corey as Amelia. Jack McGowran as Petya. Mark Eden as Engineer at Dam. Eric Chitty as Old Soldier. Roger Maxwell as Beef-Faced Colonel. That's great. Wolf Fries as Delegate, not Delicate. He's not like, oh.
Don't touch me.
Gwen Nelson as Female Janitor. Lucy Westmore as Katya. Lily Marotti as the Train Jumper. And Peter, I thought that was funny, and then I saw the movie, and it's not funny. The title, the Train Jumper, and now I know what that character is, and now it's like, that's not funny. That's not funny at all. And Peter Madden as political officer. Music by Maurice Jarre. And Maurice Jarre has done music for a lot of things, but nothing that jumps out at me. Do you know him from anything specific?
No, I think he's probably best known for this, at least in this country. But
that's
he did
true.
A lot.
And he did a lot of stuff for both movies and television. Cinematography, Freddie Young and Nicholas Roeg, who went uncredited because he started and then got fired. edited by Norman Savage, production company Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Carlo Ponti Productions, and Sawstar S.A. Distributed by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Release date, December 22nd, 1965 in the United States. Running time, forever.
All the minutes.
Forever. I think I'm still watching it right now. That's how long it is.
I will always be watching it. It's like the Hotel California. You can never leave.
Budget, $11 million. Adjusted for inflation, $89 million. Box office, $111.7 million, or over $900 million adjusted for inflation. So it made a little money, didn't it, Steve?
It definitely made its budget back, yes.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Yes.
All right, Steve, let's put on all of this winter clothing. Come on.
Oh, yes. Okay, we better bundle up.
Let's bundle up. We got to stay warm because it's super cold where we're going.
Gone to Russia.
Let's keep our thoughts to ourselves and not be poets. Do you think we can do that?
I'm way ahead of you.
Let's try really hard not to cheat on our wives.
Okay, but not too hard.
No, relatively high. I mean, yeah, come on. It's Julie Christie, dude.
Let's try for a little while and then just forget it.
Oh, yeah, that's that. Yeah. And let's go through a bunch of traumatic stuff. Not personally, but let's watch a lot of traumatic stuff.
I can do that.
And run into the world of Dr. Zhivago, Steve. Guess what I accidentally did?
What did you do?
Erased my fucking notes.
Oh, no. Does that mean it's up to me?
Hey, everybody, I'm going to apologize right now if my memory of the events in this movie seem a little spotty, but I fell asleep 5 times watching this, and I was watching part of it sitting in an airport lobby waiting for an airplane, and I was falling asleep then. Ryan, I got a little bit better, but I've been exhausted, and this is a movie that likes to take its time, and sometimes I would like vorpal warp through the film and go, how did I get here? What the fuck?
What year is this supposed to be now?
I closed my eyes for a second, and now his kid's 5 years old. How did that happen?
How come the adults never age?
But also, I had a huge number of notes on this thing, and they are gone. So I apologize if I get things wrong. Feel free to yell at me for having not only lost my notes, but getting things wrong. But you know what? Confused Jason is funny, Jason. So maybe this will work out in the end.
Yeah.
I have my critical notes. I don't have my jokes. That's what I'm saying.
So
my jokes are gone.
What we're saying is maybe all of you obsessive Zhivago completists out there can just cut us a little slack this time.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
all.
Just a little bit, guys. Just, please.
Yeah. Please.
Okay. Please be kind to the old man. I just turned 50. Please.
He's over the hump now, folks.
Yeah, I'm on the downslide.
He's on the downslope. So
I can see the Sarlacc pit at the end, at the bottom of the hill. All right, ready?
Okay, yeah, let's talk about this movie now.
Okay, Steve?
Okay.
Take it away.
Well, I mean, at least we... Okay, there's an overture.
Yes.
Takes forever.
7 minutes.
Yeah, oh boy. They wanted to give everybody plenty of time to find their seats, I guess.
And then they have long credits at the beginning, which is not typical for movies of this time period.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Overture, credits, and then
I made this joke to Steve. Against what appears to be the final project of your grandmother's oil painting class when she was at the Learning Annex.
That's exactly it. Yes, I don't know how they chose this particular image to be the backdrop for the credits.
Yeah, some trees and some grass, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, sorry, Steve.
Yeah, it's like a Bob Ross painting, but it's too bright and you can see the brush strokes too easily. But yeah, so from the credits, we fade up on like an industrial area.
Where is this dead peasant going to go? Let's put him right there. That's good. Where can we put this frozen baby? How about here, next to the wood pile? Let's put in
a happy little cemetery right
here. Put a happy little cemetery, and let's have some smoke from the village next door that's being burned to the ground for no particular reason.
Just get a little roll of white paint on your knife, and you can just a little swipe, and there's a tombstone, right. Which
now
is appropriate.
Let's get out our crimson red.
Oh, God. You know, the swipe of a knife put a lot of these folks in the cemetery to begin with, so it's kind of poetic.
Almost 5 years, and it's our first Bob Ross joke.
Well, let's take care that it is not the last.
Anyway.
Okay. So we're in an industrial area. I think it's a dam.
It's a dam.
And it's night, and there's a bigwig here, there's a general, and he's in an office.
That's right, and it's Alec Guinness.
And it's Alec Guinness, it's General...
He's learned to style his hair up high.
Yeah, baby. This is General Yevgraf Zhivago.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's looking for someone that he thinks might be his niece.
That's right.
And this girl comes in, and she's like a young woman, I guess, and maybe in her early 20s.
Yeah.
And she's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm the other Zhivago.
I'm a guy, I'm a bigwig, and answer my questions, or I'll have you shot.
And she was an orphan. The deal is she was an orphan. She doesn't quite remember, her real parents, or she's been separated from who she thought were her real parents for a long time.
Right.
She grew up in an orphanage or something. And he asks her some questions about her background, and, how did she get lost, and what does she remember about her parents? And he shows her a book of poems, and shows her a picture of the author of the poetry book, and she's like, do you remember this guy? Does this name mean anything to you?
No.
And she's all sort of like, I don't really know.
I don't remember any of that stuff. Are you hitting on me?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay. My name's Tanya.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Kamarova.
Oh, but that's not your real name, though, is it, Tanya?
It is my real name!
Maybe it's not, though. I'm going to tell
it
you a long story about maybe it's not.
Stop pulling my life apart like Daffy!
And then he forces her to sit there and listen while he tells her this entire story.
That's right. So we're being told the story of a flashback. This is all flashback, right, Steve?
Yay! I love that device.
It's story time with Alec Guinness.
It's, yeah. I think it would have been better if we had just sat there and listened to Alec Guinness just verbally tell the story.
We could have had worse narrators, couldn't we have?
Yeah, for sure. I wish he was in it more.
So do I.
So he starts telling her the story of the man who may be her father, which is his half-brother, Yuri Zhivago, the poet. And we flash back to when Yuri Zhivago is just a boy.
Are you sure he's a poet?
That's what they keep saying.
They only say it every other sentence when it comes to Dr. Zhivago.
That's what they keep saying.
Isn't it ironic that the name of the book and the movie is Dr. Zhivago?
They should have called it Poet Zhivago.
But that was the whole point, is that he had to be a doctor and not a poet because of the politics in Russia.
I don't think he was either one.
Stop it.
Let
me put it this way. There was poetry in the book that is not in the movie.
Oh, that's a shame.
So they just talk about his poetry, but then never show any of his poetry.
It sure is a shame that poetry existed that they could have shared with us.
It's a little bit like doing a biopic about Van Gogh and never showing any of his paintings.
Yeah, exactly.
Or when you do a thing about Beethoven and they come to his orchestra and it's nothing but silence. You're like, well, see, he was deaf at this time, so he couldn't even hear his own music, and we're letting you experience it as he would have experienced it.
That's great. What a great artistic choice you've made.
They couldn't read one of his poems?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Anyway, he's a doctor. He's going to doctor school.
We're skipping his childhood. He was at...
His mom died.
He was at his mom's funeral, and he's adopted by, friends of the family, and they have a daughter named Tanya, who is about his age.
Oh, by the way, movie, great work on that dead body.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they show, for whatever reason, we got to watch this, where his mom is drug out into the middle of a field, and he's looking at everything except the funeral. He's looking at the trees, and he's looking at the ground, and they drop his mom's body into the thing, and they bury him, and then he stands on top of it, and then he goes, and he gets adopted by, what's his name? Uncle Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his wife.
Yeah, and their daughter, Tanya, who, I think you can see where this is going. They have a daughter named Tanya, about his age.
They were friends of the family. They're not blood relatives.
Right. It's not incest.
No, it's not. They're just blood relatives. And he's going to marry a girl that he grew up with, like a sister.
Yeah, but it's not incest.
It's not, because they're not related. Stop implying incest. They're not related, Steve.
It's not incest, technically.
It's not incest at all, period. They're not related.
Okay. I'm just saying, if I was raised with a girl that I thought of as my sister, I probably
maybe they
wouldn't.
Never thought that way about each other.
maybe they were hot for each other from the moment they met.
Yeah, you know all the kids in the Brady Bunch fucked. They're not related. You know it for a fact. At one point, all of them were hitting puberty or in puberty, or they were all teenagers at one time. You know, they couldn't have been popular in school. Who else did they have?
They could only turn to each other.
That's right. Why do you think they shared a bathroom? What do you think that bathroom was for?
What do I think that bathroom was for?
What do you think it was for? It connects the boys' room and the girls' room.
There was a designated incest bathroom in the
house. That's right. That's exactly right. And you know who designed that house? Do you know what mastermind came up with this den of inequity? It was the dad. The dad designed the house that way.
Wow.
He was an architect.
And he said, I'm going to build an incest
house. The girls'
room
and the boys' room are connected by a shared bathroom? Yes. Isn't that a little weird? Wouldn't they accidentally walk into each other naked all the time? Yes.
Shut up.
What are you orchestrating?
Just build my goddamn house.
Build it. And put the cameras where I told you to put them.
Oh, man. We just really made the Brady Bunch a lot more interesting.
Anyway, that's not what's happening in this movie.
No incest.
That's right.
Technically.
And remember, he also, the only thing that he's given is a balalaika.
The balalaika.
A balalaika.
Which belonged to his mother, right?
It's like a triangle guitar.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know how to play.
No, but it's like his only possession that he keeps for like his whole life. Yeah.
From his mommy. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we see him, he grows up, and now we see him being played by Omar Sharif, and now he's a doctor. He's about to leave school and enter general practice as a doctor.
Yeah, because he wants to do general practice, not research.
Right.
But he's also a poet.
Yes, he is. So that's we're told. Right. Yes.
And we see him leave the doctor school, and he gets on a bus, and then he sees Julie Christie, and she sees him, but they don't know each other.
Right.
And I guess we're supposed to go, ooh, I don't know what happens. We spend a lot of time on a train, like a light rail.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And then he comes home, doesn't he? No, we follow Julie Christie.
We follow her, yeah, yeah.
And she runs into who?
She runs into Pasha.
Yeah.
Who is a part of, who supports the sort of the germinating revolution. Because this is like in Russia right before World War One.
Right.
When the communist revolution hadn't happened yet, but was growing. No.
And he's like, here, comrade, take this paper, take this. And the police are like, what are you doing? Knock it off.
Yeah, you commie.
And she runs up and pretends to be his sister.
Yeah, kind of bails him out.
More incest. There you go. Look at that. That's anyway, right, and they're like, okay, never mind. And they're like in love?
Yeah, I get they're engaged. So
they're engaged, yeah. Right. But he's like all about the revolution and workers' rights and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, please stop it. Or calm down a little. Whatever, I gotta go home. And she does, and she lives with her mommy.
Right.
Right. And she's a dress person?
Yeah, she's some kind of a seamstress or something. Right. Looks like she runs a shop.
Mm-hmm. And who's there, Steve?
Is this where we meet Komarovsky?
Yes.
Yeah, Komarovsky is like this big wig who is sort of...
He's a high political guy, rich dude,
and,
socialite, bourgeoisie, asshole, rapist, dickhead.
Yeah, generally speaking, just not a terribly likable character.
He lets it know all over his face that he really, really, really wants to fuck Lara.
Yeah.
Not marry, just with the sexy times.
Right,
as
exactly.
A, like a mistress kind of thing. And he does this creepy thing where he dresses her up and he's all gross and I hate him and I don't want to look at him again.
Yeah, and he invites her to go do we see the massacre first and then they go on their weird, like, creepy date? Or I'm not sure what order things happen.
No, so there, a couple of things happen. He does take, okay, so here's what happens. He says, we're going to go out. She's like, okay. And Chicago goes home, and we meet Alex, Uncle Alex.
Yeah.
And his auntie. And they're talking about how Tanya's going to be coming home. Tanya's going to come home soon. Tanya's
right,
coming home.
Right.
She's going to come home soon, right? And everyone's all excited because he's got a boner for Tanya because they're going to get married or something, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yay, but they're going to go, they're all talking about some political stuff and he's happy to be home. And meanwhile, Lara and Komarovsky go out to dinner and it's super expensive, right?
Right.
And she won't even bring herself to call him by his first name. And he really, really wants that, but that's not going to happen. Meanwhile, outside, some people are peacefully marching down the street.
Yes.
Until some dragoons show up.
And now, then it's not peaceful anymore.
I will openly admit, I was not into this movie. Not interested, not engaged, until this scene happened. After this scene happened, I was more engaged in this because I thought, oh God, it's just a bedroom romance.
Right.
It's just going to be so boring. And then horrible things happen.
Oh, yeah.
I become interested. So they're just peacefully marching and some dragoons show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they decide, we don't like what they're doing. So what's the best solution? Oh, I know. Let's ride into them with our swords and run people down. That'll be great.
And that's just what they do.
That's just what they do. And there's a great shot of Omar Sharif watching this from his balcony, and he outacts Ralph Richardson in this scene.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Because he is thoroughly engaged. Like, he is seeing horrors and monstrosity, and Ralph Richardson comes up, and he's looking up at the sky. I don't know what he's... Like, oh, dear, what? Oh, come inside quickly. But it's very apparent that what happens is that they run down people, they run down women, they kill children, there's this shot where he comes running out of the house, and this is also happening while she's having dinner in one of the high society restaurants.
Right.
Zhivago comes running out. He wants to start helping people, but that shot that they have of the snow on the ground, just with this huge gout of blood all over it, and you know, oh, okay, so this isn't just some light, frothy, romantic movie. He's trying to help someone. Dragoons come up and say, oh, no, we'll help him. Get in your house.
Right.
And he's like, okay.
I guess.
They got to convince him to come back inside.
Yeah.
Richardson comes
Ralph
out and says...
Uncle Ralph kind of drags him in.
Yeah. He's Uncle Ralph. And he drags him back inside. Then, what happens?
An ambulance drives by.
We'll wait for it. Why not? It's been a while.
I hope
die
they
on
die.
Someone else's dime. Anyway.
Okay, they're gone.
So, what happens? That's it for the slaughter scene. Then
right.
We come back to Laura and Mr. Grabby Hands.
Yeah.
And they have another date where he dresses her up even more scantily, right?
Yeah.
And he's all like, I want everything. I want you, boobs, all of it. Right?
Right.
And she's like, no. And he slaps her around a bit. And we hate him now.
Yeah.
We hate him.
Yeah, he's bad.
Meanwhile, Tanya's home. Yay!
Yay!
She's dressed like a big pink bunny, and she's coming off the train, and they're in love, right, Steve?
Yeah.
And everyone's happy because they're going to get married and pump all babies. That'd be great. They don't care if they were raised like brother and sister, right?
No, because it's technically not incest.
That's right. And then we have the scene... Oh, that's right. That night, the same night... We skipped this. The same night that the dragoons ran everyone down, Pavel shows up at her dress shop.
Yeah, and he's got a big gash in his face.
Great reveal on that, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the effect that... Okay, so here's the thing. David Lean kind of knows how to shoot a movie. And so... Even if you get bored, you got to admit, he really knows how to work that camera. This great shot of him talking to her through the glazed window.
Yeah.
And he looks almost ghost-like. Almost as if he's a special effect.
Yeah.
And then when she opens the door, he's got this huge gash. It looks like his jaw might be broken. And he had picked up a gun during the entire conflict, and he gives her the gun. And he says, hide this gun, please. And she's like, okay. And he's like, this is not going to go peacefully. We thought this could go peacefully. Well, it's not going to now.
Yeah. Oops.
So then Komorowski shows up at her house, right? No. So Lara's mom figures out what's going on. Because Komorowski was a friend of Laura's mom. And she figures out that Komorowski is making the moves and, you know, using her as kind of like this side piece. And
right.
She don't like that very much, does she?
No, she drinks a bottle of iodine.
That's
as
right.
As a matter of fact.
And so, again, another fantastic shot of Rod Steiger running this pan shot of him running through the house.
Yeah.
And we see him through windows, and he runs out, grabs a coachman and says, drive to this address, get this guy, bring him here, no questions. And they bring in the professor from the school.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I'm going to try to save her. And he works his magic, and he saves her, but with the help of who, Steve?
Of young Dr. Zhivago, who was attending
right.
the same party.
Mm-hmm.
And when the professor gets called away, he's like, hey, come on. Come with me. You want to do general practice, kid?
Yeah, watch this.
Watch this shit.
And they save her,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because we never see her again.
Yeah, trust us. She's alive.
And they're like, we got to keep this quiet because she's trying to stoop her daughter and he's not supposed to be doing that. And it's all a scandal. And if it ever got out, it would, you know, cause problems for him, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And Zhivago seems to have some problems with it, but nothing major, right?
Right. And then doesn't he goes downstairs and he sees through a window, like into the next room. He sees Laura and Ron Steiger, Komarovsky, yeah. I think that's the first time he sees Laura?
As Laura, yeah.
Knowing who she is, yeah. And,
right, exactly.
Yeah, and he sort of gets, like, you know, what the deal is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we may as well just throw it in here now. At some point, Laura is like, I don't like this, you're evil. And he's like, yeah, I am, and I'm going to prove it. And what does he do, Steve? What does Komarovsky do?
He rapes her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then is that before or after he calls her a slut?
That was after.
He says, like, there's two types of women in the world, and you're not the first kind, you're a slut. Yeah.
And then he does that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he says, don't think of this as rape because it insults both of us.
Yeah.
And it's like, nope, dude, she knows it, everybody knows it.
Yeah, what was it then?
And to this movie's credit, this is not used to motivate anybody except her.
That's true. Yeah. It doesn't become like fodder for a man's
revenge
story.
Thing for Pavel or for anybody else. Because she's like, fuck this guy.
Where's that gun?
So now it's Christmas time. Yay. And Laura goes over to, she grabs the gun. She goes over to Komarovsky's house. She's like, is he home? And the butler's like, oh, no, he's not, miss. And he's like, okay, where is he? He's at that Christmas party. Okay. And he's like, make sure don't tell him because I don't want to get big trouble.
Don't tell him I stooged on him.
That's right. Especially if you do something like, I don't know, shoot him or something. That'd be bad.
You didn't hear it from me.
That's right. And at the party is Komarovsky, who's playing poker or whatever, and
Zhivago,
and Tanya.
And Tanya, yeah.
And they're all having a great big time, and Laura comes in, and Laura walks through the party, and Tanya sees her, and they're dancing around, and they're about to make an announcement, aren't they, Steve?
Yeah.
They're about to make an announcement, and they don't even get to make it, do they?
No, because it gets slightly interrupted by Laura shooting Komarovsky.
That's right.
Oops. Sorry.
And he kind of starts bleeding from his arm, and he stumbles backwards. A bunch of people surround him, and someone's yelling, call the police, and he's like, don't call the police, because if the police get called, what happens, Steve?
Everybody finds out.
Everyone finds out about the affair. That doesn't matter, because all of those rich people start gossiping amongst each other. But who shows up? Okay, oh, that's right. On her way to the party, she runs into Pavel.
Yeah.
And he's like, what's going on? What's wrong? And she's like, I wrote in a letter. Go read the letter. And he's like, what? No. What's wrong? And he's like, go read in the letter. And he's like, fine. And he runs off. And I guess she told him, guess what? I'm going to go kill a guy. Bye. Yeah.
So, yeah, he shows up and takes her away.
And the whole party parts like the Red Sea as he walks through.
Yeah.
And they leave. And Zhivago looks at them with admiration.
I think so, yeah. And that's how he talks about it later.
There's a part of Zhivago that really doesn't like the rich people.
Right.
At all. Maybe it's because he wasn't rich when he was growing up. Right. I don't know. We'll never know, everybody. In a movie this long, we'll never know. Anyway. I guess they get married or something.
Yeah, apparently that's what we're told. Yeah, they get married, and Zhivago and Tanya get married, and Laura and Pasha get married, and then World War One breaks out.
Yeah, but
whoa.
Everyone starts joining up, right?
Yeah.
Or some people have to serve even though they don't want to, and Zhivago becomes a doctor for the war.
And Laura becomes a nurse.
Yeah. And she has a kid, by the way.
That's right. They have a kid.
Katya, is that
her? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, she just chucks over her shoulder to become a nurse. I don't know where Katya went.
Yeah. Take care of yourself for a few years, kid.
Bye-bye. And we're getting some more narration from Alec Guinness explaining everything that's going on and about how this was the opening of the rebellion because people were fighting in a war that was, they felt, was mostly done by the, you know.
Yeah, the ruling class.
By the ruling class, and they had to fight it, and there was a lot of upsetting stuff. And then we have a scene where people fight on the battlefield, and we see Pasha stand up and go, come on, comrades. And everyone follows him because they look up to him. And then there's a big explosion.
Yeah.
And we think, uh-oh, Posh is dead.
Right, we see his glasses fall to the ground.
And that could only mean dead, right,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, exactly. Alive people would go get their glasses.
Meanwhile, what happened? Okay, so there's a bunch of troops leaving the battlefield, and they encounter new troops coming into the battlefield.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the new guy, the old guys are going, don't go that way. Don't go that way.
Yeah, just turn around. Nothing, but
just turn around. Everyone's going to die. And the guys on horseback who represent the hierarchy, who one very old guy with the handlebar mustache and some other guys are like, stop it. Don't listen to them. Keep going. One guy gets up on a barrel and he's like, listen, everybody. We're doing this for, those people are going to come and get our stuff. And everyone's like, shut up. We've heard this before. No one's coming to get our women or anything. Stop it. And then the barrel breaks and he falls into the barrel water. And that's funny for exactly 1 second. Why is that, Steve?
Because then they kill him.
That's right. David Lean knows how to make a movie, and he really knows how to pull the rug out from underneath you, doesn't he, Steve?
Yeah, they kill him good. They all gather, they gather around him, and they beat him to death. You don't see it graphically, but that's...
Well, the first one is the guy who falls into the barrel, and he's like, oh, that's right. Stop!
That's
right. And he gets shot.
They shoot him, and then the water turns red.
Yeah, and he slowly sinks into the barrel, and
yeah.
Then they pull all the other guys off of their horses,
and beat
off
them,
of their horses, and beat them to death. And you're kind of like, oh, okay. And that's when Zhivago and Laura meet, see each other again.
Yeah, right.
Because he's trying to tend to the people who had been injured in the skirmish. And she's like, I'm a nurse. And she's like, I'm kind of a nurse. And he's like, okay, help me.
Cool.
And they fix some people, and he sews up a guy, right? And she's helping him out. And then he's like, hey, I know you. And she's like, I know you too, I guess. And that's when they get to know each other. And then they go to a place where there's like a hospital. And that's when he finds out that the communists have taken over.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're going to stay here and you're going to run this hospital. And he's like, okay, fine. And so they're there for I don't know how long. How long do you think they're there for?
It seems like a couple of months at least.
6 months. That's right. It's 6 months.
Yeah, they're there for a little while.
Yeah. And then she's like, well, I guess we're going to go. And he's like, I love you. And she's like, go away. Stop it.
You're married, asshole.
You're
so
married.
Am I.
Don't have something you have to lie to your wife about.
Yeah.
Both married. Stop. And he goes, okay.
All right.
And she leaves. And he goes back home, and home is different.
Yeah, now there's a bunch of new people living in his house.
That's right, a whole bunch of new people, because they had enough room for, like, what, 15 families or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, and they were like, where are you doing all this space, you rich assholes?
Yeah, and he kind of agrees with it, just not the way it's being done.
Right.
He kind of agrees with it. He's like, yeah, it was too much room. And he's reunited with Tanya, and he meets his son for the first time, who smacks him in his face.
Where you been?
I love Steve. Lean does this a lot in this movie, where you anticipate the, for example, in this scene, where he runs up to his kid, and you think they're going to hug or something like that, but instead, his kid slaps him in his face.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're still living there with Alex, right?
Yeah.
Because his mom aunt died.
Right. Yeah. While he was away at war, she died. Mm. So it's just it's him and what's her name, Tanya, and their son and Uncle Ralph Richardson. Yeah, those are,
that's right.
Yeah.
And so they're not living great. It's not great. Things aren't great.
No.
And things just get worse. So what happens? He starts being forced to work as a doctor.
Right.
And now do we go back to Laura at all? We don't. She just
I don't think we go back to Laura for a while, yeah.
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 So he comes home one day and there's even more people and people are like, you need to stop what you're doing. People are listening to the way you talk. You need to knock it off. And he's like, fine. He comes home and he's like, why isn't the stove lit? My kid's gonna die. How dare you, woman? And it turns out she's only lighting the stove in the morning when he's there and when he gets back,
right,
because there's not enough coal. And then he feels really bad and he apologizes to her and then he sneaks out and he's going to get some firewood, right?
Yeah.
And who's watching him?
None other than his half-brother, Yevgraf.
The guy who's been narrating this whole thing.
Who is a policeman.
Who's a police officer. A secret police officer.
Yeah. So he follows him home and he's like, you know, I could arrest you, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You're in a lot of trouble because you're a poet and the authorities don't dig your poetry.
Right.
So I'm going to help you and your family get out of Moscow.
Now, they do a weird thing in this scene. In these scenes, plural. So, number one, when he gets back, people are taking his stuff.
Yeah.
They're taking the stuff out of the house.
Yeah, he has to kind of fight to get his balalaika back. Somebody's going to run out with that. Yeah, he has to fight to get...
And when he does that, firewood falls out of his coat.
Yeah.
And that's... Busted. That's a busted... He could get busted for that. And just as they're about to do it, his brother shows up, and everyone's like, oh, shit, let's get out of here, and they all leave. And that's when he does the thing. Now, what they do, what is weird in this scene, is that we never hear him speak.
Right. He tells us what he's saying through his narration.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the other people's dialogue. But we never actually hear him speak during the scene. It's an interesting choice for this. But that doesn't amount to much. Anyway, what he tells him is, you got to get out of here. Go to that country house that you abandoned years ago. Get out of the city. Run. Just run. Take your kid, take your grandpa, uncle, and just go. Run. And they're like, okay. And then they wait outside for everyone falls asleep waiting for a train outside. And the train shows up and it's a cattle car, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't remind anybody of anything, does it, Steve?
Oh, of course not. Why? No, it doesn't. What would that remind anyone of?
Anyway, they say only 50 people and they all get on the cattle train and it's got straw on the floor and they have to use disinfectant and thankfully there's a stove to keep them warm and they all have bunk beds and there's a guy in there already, right, Steve?
Yeah. Klaus Kinski's there.
That's right.
They caught him sleeping on the set, and they decided to put him in the movie.
What are you doing? Get me the fuck what? I'm in a movie now? Fuck you. And they're just filming it. This is awesome.
This is
great.
Keep,
just keep doing that. I'm a free man. I'm a free man.
He's the best part of the movie. As we learn, he has been taken as slave labor.
That's right.
And they say he's volunteer labor, but he tells it a different way.
he basically says, I'm the only free man here. Everyone else is cattle. Yeah. It literally is just something that I think he didn't even have lines. He was just talking in general.
Just tell us what you think about things, Klaus.
What do you think of the cast? I'm the only free man. All the rest here are cattle.
Cool. Sounds great.
Perfect. Thank you.
Perfect.
And they ride along on the train for about 9 hours, and it goes on. But we see a lot of stuff on the train trip, don't we, Steve?
Yeah, they ride past this bombed out town.
It's like the bummer train tour. It's like the worst thrill ride ever.
Yeah, they drive past they ride past this town that apparently was destroyed by the Red Army because it was loyal to what they're calling the Whites, which were the loyals, the loyalists to the old government.
That's right.
They see this woman running towards them with a baby.
That's right.
And she throws the baby on the train.
Right.
And then they drag her onto the train. And
right.
And then Laura's like, or not Laura, but Tanya's like, oh, hey, the baby's dead.
Great.
Wah, wah, wah.
Put her in the soup. What do we do?
What do we do? What, should we keep her? What?
And anyway, the old lady tells them that they burned down the town because they were accused of selling horses to the Whites, but that wasn't them. That was another town over.
Right.
Right. And you're like, wow, that's a real bummer scene. We got a dead baby in a burned out town, and that's awful. And then we have scenes of them opening the car door. And for a second, you're like, wait, what am I looking at? They open up the train car door, and I don't recognize what it is until they break the ice away from the car door.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking cold. And they have to get all the dirty straw out. And they get all the dirty straw out, and then they disinfect it. Whoa, I'm so glad we did that. And then we have shots of Zhivago looking out a window and Klaus Kinski laughing at him. And they're riding along, and then the train stops.
Yeah. And they've also been talking about this commander in the Red Army named Commander Strelnikov.
Strelnikov.
Yeah.
And he is like, Klaus Kinski thinks he's a real hero. And other people are like, he's a monster, man.
He's the guy who was apparently responsible for burning that village that they saw.
And a bunch of other things.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
Right. And so the train stops, everybody gets out, and then another train rides by, right?
Yeah.
And this train is painted all red, and it's only got one car on it, and someone says, that's Strelnikov. And everyone's like, oh. And we cut to the train, and who is it, Steve?
It turns out Strelnikov is Pasha.
Dun, dun, dun!
He lives.
Intermission.
He's back, and he's pissed.
Intermission.
Yeah.
So you get up and you leave your chair and you're going to go get yourself another Coke, maybe smoke about 15 more cigarettes. You start wondering, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. Am I supposed to feel happy that the communists took over because the bourgeoisie weren't that great, but neither the communists, is everything's bad no matter what happens? You went from one brutal thing to another brutal thing, and I don't know how I feel. Oh, the lights are going dim. I gotta go back in the movie theater.
I guess I'll watch the rest of it. I paid for the ticket. I guess I should watch the rest of it.
My wife seems to be digging the romance, but there hasn't been a whole lot of it.
I thought I would be more entertained by the death.
But it wasn't. It made me feel sad inside and cold.
Just kind of bummed.
So now we cut back, and they make it to the Ural Mountains.
Yeah.
Yay, and then they stop the train again.
Yeah, I think it's like the tracks are snowed over or something this time. It's like an unscheduled stop.
Well, no, because remember, they make Dr. Zhivago get off the train. And then they take him to Solensnikov.
Yeah, he's walking through the woods, and like the red officers catch him. Yeah. He goes to meet Solensnikov, and then he sees that it's Pasha. He recognizes him from that night at the party.
And Pasha's like, "You're a poet," and he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Your poetry is all emotional, and it's all about you."
We don't dig that kind of
we
thing.
We don't like
in Russia
that
anymore.
Stuff. It's stupid. We hate it. And he's like, "What about your wife?" And he's like, "How do you know about that?" And he's like, "I met your wife. I fell in love with her.
Shut up about my wife.
Fantasized about her. Look at these drawings I did. Look at this one. This one's called an Australian cow tipper. You put all of your feet on the 4 feet, and then you tip backwards. You put the tip. Anyway, that one was Anyway,
holy
I shouldn't
shit.
Have shown you that. I shouldn't have shown you that. Anyway, here's all these poems I wrote about your wife. This one's called Laura's Mine and Definitely Not Pavel's."
You can go.
No, I'm not done. Anyway. But Pavel says, you know, that's all in the past. That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They say that a lot. It doesn't matter when it comes to family and wives. It's like, look, I'm Mr. Mean Guy now. I'm Mr. Mean Guy.
Yeah.
And I've got a scar on my face, and I'm all mean, and I'm all about the party, and we'll kill anybody, and I should kill you, but I'm not gonna. You go home. And he's like, phew.
Thank God.
One of the soldiers actually says, "You're lucky." And it's like, yep, he's been pretty lucky, all right.
Yeah, because he kills everybody. Okay.
Well, what I mean is that Zhivago's been pretty lucky so far.
Oh, God, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so far.
So far. So then he makes it out to the town.
Right.
And this old guy comes up and he's like, "Oh," and he greets Alex and he tries to bow to him. And Alex says, "That's all done with. Come on, show us home." And they go riding forever. And then they see in the distance this burning village. And it's like, Solensnikov did that. It's burning everything. Everything sucks. No matter how pretty it is, it sucks. Everything sucks. It's awful. I'm like, "Okay, could you just get us home?" "No, I'm not done. Everyone's starving and everything sucks and it's awful." And he's like, "Okay, fine." So they get to the house, and it's a nice house.
Yeah.
But they can't live in it, really. But there's a cottage next. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been sealed up by the party.
Right. But they can live in the cottage.
Right.
And they're like, "Yay!" And then they start farming and stuff. And they start growing crops, and everyone's happy, and Grandpa Daddy Alex is like, "You'll remember this as the best time of your lives, unless, you know, Zhivago fucks it up and has an affair that you actually kind of suss out because he's always going to town, and then kind of ruins your marriage a little bit, but, you know, other than that, everything's gonna be great, right?"
What are the odds of that happening?
And then the bummer newspaper, the guy, okay, so the town guy comes in, and he's like, "Here's the newspaper to bum you out," and it turns out they killed the czar and his family, right?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh, no going back now.
That's awful. Anyway, no going back now. Anyway, there's a winter, and he freaks out looking at the ice on a window pane, and then it's spring, and there's flowers all over the fucking place, and he freaks out looking at a flower. What I mean is, he, like, stares at something, and then we go way deep inside it, right?
Yeah.
And his wife's kind of like, "I'm sick of you. Just go to town. Do something. There's a library. Just get the fuck go, please." And he's like, "Okay." And so we zoom into this daffodil, and we zoom out of Julie Christie's face. Because she's at the library in town.
Yeah.
And he's in the library in town.
Yeah, he just walks in.
Yeah,
and he's like,
see,
"Hey!"
And they see each other, and like, "Wow, what are you doing here?" And he's like, "I'm with my family and stuff." And I met your husband.
He's
kind of turned into fearless leader from the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, and he's like really crazy.
He kind of burns villages.
Yeah,
that's like his thing now.
He's like as close to a Nazi as you can get without being one. And I know
not
they're
really
not
100%.
Yeah. Anyway,
not really behind his whole deal.
Yeah. Let's walk around and talk, and they walk around and talk, right?
Yeah.
And then she invites him up to her house. Her house is nice, and he's like, "Where's your kid?" And she's like, "She's a school." And he's like, "How fast can you get your panties off?" And he's like, "I don't know. Let's time it."
Let's just do this, shall we?
That's right. And I'm fairly certain he kissed her so hard he broke a tooth.
Oh, my God, yes. They their faces slap into each other.
That's not the only thing. Oh, anyways, so they have the sexy times.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I got guilt now. That was dumb. Why was I thinking this would make me happy? It won't make me happy." Right? And she's like, what does she say? Something like, "Get out." They're like, "How are we going to make this work?" And he's like, "I don't know."
Yeah, she says, "What are we going to do?" Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, whatever. We just keep doing this."
He goes home. He can't sleep. His wife is still nice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't do anything to deserve this.
And so he decides he's going to go back and he's going to break it off. So he goes back and he breaks it off and she cries. But she accepts it because she knows it's wrong and they can't really do it.
Right.
And he's like, "Good, got it. Now everything is perfect. I'll just go home to my loving wife. She's pregnant with another kid of mine. And I'm sure I'll see that kid. Oh, boy, I bet I will. Because all I have to do is go home right now and I'll be good. And you're here. We're all, yay.
Great
for
fine.
Us. Being adults now. Here I am adulting." And he's riding through the forest on his way home. And what happens, Steve?
He's captured by the Red Army.
Oh, no. And what are they
wanting for? They're like, "Hey, we've been following you. We know who you are. We know about your family. We know about you having an affair. And also, we need a doctor. So you're with us now."
And he's like, okay.
I guess. Okay.
And now we have a super fun adventures as they go around killing children.
Yay.
So they confront these whites, right?
Yeah.
They shoot them as they're running away. And then they go out there and they all turn out to be young kids.
Just teenagers, basically, yeah.
Yeah, just teenagers being led by, I guess they went to a military school.
Yeah.
And they were being led by this old man. And the guy who shot him was like, you motherfucker, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
And we're like, again, what are we supposed to feel? What? Who's the bad guy? Why are you doing this to us?
This is all just bad.
Everyone's bad. Everything's awful. And he's stuck there with them. And he's like, "I want to go home." And they're like, "You're not going home." And he's like, fine. And then eventually, after, I don't know, 20 minutes of absolute misery, and they're like marching through the desolate white, what we think of when we think of Russia, just flat white nothing. And they see these villagers come walking out of the
They're just walking out of the wastes. Yeah.
And this skeleton woman is like, "Soldiers came and burned our village." And they're like, "Whites, reds?" She's like, "Soldiers, this is the best answer. Soldiers came. Everybody's terrible. Goodbye." And Zhivago is like, "I'm checking out. Yeah. I'm done." Because there was an argument right before that where the party, the local party guy is like, "No, we're not letting you send him home. He needs to stay." And the leader is like, "No, we took him away from his wife and kid. He gets to go home." And it's like, "No, he doesn't." And the leader's like, "We could shoot you right now. We could shoot you." And he's like, "Yeah, but then who would report back in to tell you?" And he's like, "Okay, fine." So again, the guys who kidnapped him are now being decent and want to send him home.
But it's so over their head,
We can't hate him. But that's when he looks up at the moon, or the sun. The balalaika plays again.
Yeah.
And then he rides off in a different direction. At some point he loses his horse, and all of his everything turns into rags. He's not looking good, is he,
no,
Steve?
No. A little gaunt. A little pale.
A little frozen.
Yeah, but he somehow makes it back to Uriat.
Well, first he mistakes a family for his own family.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's having a little hallucination problem.
Then he nearly gets hit by a train.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he makes it back to Uriat, which is the town where Lara lived.
And he's like, Where is everybody? And they said, oh, they all moved to Moscow.
Yeah, his family. Yeah, his family left their cottage.
His family left the cottage and moved to Moscow. And he's like, okay. So now he's going to go try to find Lara, right?
Let me go look up the old ex-girlfriend.
That's right. And he comes shambling out, finds the key, finds a note, reads the note that said, everybody's gone to Moscow, and here's the key, and there's some food up there in case. Because we knew that you, I don't know how we found this out, but... that you were alive or something?
Yeah, she says in the letter, like, people in town saw him.
Yeah.
So maybe
he's just been wandering around town for, like, 5 days.
Is that Dr. Zhivago?
Tanya!
I think that's Zhivago.
Is that him kissing a donkey, calling it Tanya? Tanya!
He don't look right.
He makes it up into the house, looks at himself in a mirror, and has a freak out, right? Where he starts saying Tanya's name over and over again, which must have made Lara feel great. And he he wakes up and he's no longer got snot all up in his mustache. It's frozen there, and he's like not covered in ice. And she's there, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, "Wife sent me a letter." And he reads it, and it turns out his wife has fled to France.
Yeah, they took the opportunity, I guess, to escape the country, yeah.
Yeah. Dear Yuri, me and my father and both of our children have fled the movie, never to be seen again.
Please don't come look for us.
It's okay if you want to fuck that blonde woman in town.
We're just done, okay?
Yeah, we're done. Goodbye.
We're done with the whole thing.
I think she's a good woman. This is my stamp of approval. Fuck away, my husband. Just keep fucking her. I have no ill will.
Just keep fucking her.
In fact, I demand that you fuck her and never stop. Bye-bye.
If I come back and find out you haven't been fucking her, I'm going to be so mad.
Anyway, so him and her start living together, right?
Yeah, and then one day
a bear comes.
They get an unexpected visitor. Yeah.
Who is it?
It's our old pal Komarovsky. He's still alive and still in the movie.
He's a minister of something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, "Listen, I don't know why I'm doing this, and neither does the script, but here we go." And I don't know if the book knows either. Anyway, I want to help you. Your wife is in Paris. I can get you out of the country because everyone hates your poetry and they know you're a poet. And also, you kind of abandoned the army and that's not good either. And he's like, "Well, what about Laura?" Well, Laura was like married to a monster man and he's dead now. Because here's something that I wish we would had seen rather than have it related to us. But since this is all being told from, you know, who's either Laura or Zhivago's perspectives, and neither one of them witnessed it, we don't get to see it either. Turns out Pasha went crazy and decided that he was Pasha again, and they were going to hang him, and then he grabbed a gun and blew his brains out. So yeah. Laura's free.
Yay.
And you guys need to leave because it doesn't matter that she was married to him. They'll kill you too. They'll kill everyone's going to be with the killing. And they're like, "Fuck off. Get out." And
yeah, we don't want your help. Stairs.
And he starts yelling at him, thinking, "Yes, you think you're better than me just because I'm some gross..."
"Oh, just because I'm a rapist.
Collaborated rapist guy.
Oh, I never raped anybody."
So they decide to leave. They go back to the cottage.
Yeah.
Where he recreates the life that he had with Tanya, but with a brand new family.
Yeah, when they live in the big house this time because they're like, "Fuck it."
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? We'll break open number one, the big house is frozen solid.
Yes.
It's like a winter wonderland. It's like Mr. Freeze's house. It's like...
"Come inside.
This is where Cold Miser lives." And
"Welcome to my home."
They defrost it. They live in there for a little while.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He starts writing poetry again.
He starts writing a lot of poetry again, none of which we ever get to read.
Nope.
Or even hear, which would have been neat.
Would have been.
And we're thinking, okay, things are okay, but then who shows up again?
It's Komarovsky again, and this time, like, he has some army buddies with him.
Yeah, and he's like, "Listen, you're either going to leave with me now, or these guys are going to come back and kill all of you."
Right.
"They're going to firing squad you and her daughter." And he's like, "No, never." And he pulls him aside and he says, "Listen, is your ego really that big that you would allow those two to die?" And he's like, "Okay, good point. That's a good point." And so they all say, "Hey, we're all leaving, right?" right? They're all leaving.
Yeah, except there's not room for everybody in the carriage.
What a coinkydink.
So Zhivago's like, oh, you guys go ahead, I'll catch up.
I'll catch up, you go ahead, I'll just stay here with my suitcases, you guys go. Go! And then they leave, right?
Yeah.
And he runs upstairs and breaks a window just to watch them leave and leave over the horizon.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Then we see them waiting for him at the train station, and he doesn't show up.
He's not going to make it to Hogwarts if he doesn't get on that
train. He's not. He's going to have to register late.
Yeah.
And he might not get all of the classes that he wants.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some time passes. Yevgrav, Alec Guinness, is back telling us the story.
We're back in the room again.
Yeah. And he's like, yada, yada, yada. I actually ran into him about 8 years after that, and he wasn't doing too good. He was in bad health.
Yep.
And he asked me to help him get a job at a hospital, and I was like, sure, whatever.
And I got him a job at a hospital and bought him a suit.
Bought him a suit, yeah.
And he, you know, his heart was paper thin, is what he said. His heart was paper thin.
Yeah, and he gets on a streetcar.
And he's driving down the streetcar, and just like the first time, they saw each other but didn't recognize each other. This time he sees Laura walking down the street, and he's desperate to get off the car to talk to her, right?
Right.
And it's not working out because it's crowded. She gets a streetcar stops, she gets ahead of it, he jumps out, he calls her name, and then fucking has a massive heart attack and dies.
Yep.
Right there in the street, and she doesn't even see it happen.
No.
And he's like, and also, Laura disappeared into a work camp and died there, probably.
The end. Drive safe, everybody.
Anyway, these are your parents.
Yeah.
I'm like 90% sure that you're my niece. And she's like, that's nice. And she gets up, and her boyfriend shows up, and our fiance.
Yeah.
And he's an engineer at the dam. And he's like, okay, well, bye-bye. And because she doesn't know if she wants it to be true, because she always wanted to have parents. But this is a lot. This is a lot, Steve.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Yevgrav is like, well, just think about it. You know, maybe we can be friends and I can help
you out.
You
can do worse than having a horrendously powerful uncle in the
Soviet Union. Yeah.
But they're like waving goodbye, looking very much like a propaganda poster.
Oh, yeah.
And she picks up her bags, and she's got what on her back, Steve?
She's got a balalaika.
And what does Alec Guinness ask?
He says, can you play that? And her fiance says, oh, yeah, she plays it just, you know.
She's like, an artist.
She's an artist. And he says, well, who taught you? And she says, or he says, what your fiance says, and nobody taught her. She just knows how to play.
Yeah.
And Alec Guinness says, then it's a gift.
And all of a sudden, slapped right on there, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, and then we get a gift. Because
it's
the movie
over.
Is over.
It is over, and an interesting choice they made with the cast is, as we're watching water spill into the river, it's like the credits are flowing with the water spilling into the river as well.
Yeah.
Not exactly. They're flowing in the same direction as the water is, coming, scrolling from the bottom up. That was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's over.
Yeah.
Steve?
Yeah, man.
In the interest of time.
Uh-huh.
How do you feel about Dr. Zhivago? Go!
If David Lean didn't care, why should I? Okay, so, you know, there's the old saying that there's such a thing as too much of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's also such a thing as too much of a mediocre thing.
Yeah.
And this movie is the second thing. obviously, we've talked about it before. We talked about it when we did Lawrence of Arabia, and it's still true in this movie. David Lean is a fantastic director, has a great eye, is technically as perfect as probably any director at his level has ever been. Zhivago looks great. It's a well-shot movie. You talked about some of the great shots when we were going through the plot. It's a splendidly made and shot film.
Boy, you don't doubt its budget, do you?
Oh, my God. Yeah. You can see where the money went. It looks great. The performances are very, very good. All the lead performances are terrific. Really fascinating historical setting with so much story possibility. And it's interesting for us here in America because this part of history and in this part of the world for us has been largely unexplored by cinema.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of major movies that take place around the time of the Russian Revolution and really attempt to depict what was going on there. So that's all great. It's just a shame to me that something more interesting doesn't happen over the course of these 3.5 hours. The big problem with Dr. Zhivago is that there's very little here for me to hold on to. There's a lot to admire, but there's very little for me to hang on to. Zhivago, the lead character, is no Lawrence of Arabia.
He's a cipher.
That's exactly the word for it. And that's a problem with a lot of epic films like this, is that the protagonist is just a blank slate.
I mean, unlike Lawrence, who was not a cipher.
No.
Lawrence was a riddle in the middle of that fucking movie.
And was very idiosyncratic and had a lot of interesting things going on. And it's not Omar Sharif's fault, because he does just fine. There are a couple of moments where he's just absolutely terrific. But the three most important things about his character are that he's a doctor, he's a poet, and he loves Laura. And I'm not sure, watching the movie, if I really believe any of those things. His poetry in particular comes across like exposition. We're told that he's a brilliant, subversive poet whose work is so beloved that it's continued to be read underground after the communists ban it, but we never see any of the poetry.
That's right, because we see his funeral.
Yo, he has like hundreds of people come to his funeral. He's like a celebrity.
25.
He's like a celebrity. Like, he's mourned publicly when he dies, so he's like a big deal.
By the way, that's not that uncommon in Russia at that time. There was a lot of underground publications going on.
Of course. But the point is, like, we never really see that. We're told about it. And he himself, he doesn't really seem like a poet. He doesn't seem to have passion or interests or opinions. He's just sort of there. And we see him looking at things meaningfully from time to time. But he doesn't, there's nothing to him. We don't get to know who he really is. And Laura has the same problem, other than the fact that she's beautiful, which we're told over and over again. Like, she's Lisa.
We don't really need to be told, do we?
We don't. She's gorgeous. She's Julie Christie. And it's like she's Lisa in The Room. Everybody's constantly remarking about how beautiful she is. It's like, I get it. She's beautiful. God. Okay. And there's very little else about her that we're even supposed to care about, apparently. It's just, oh, there she is, and she's pretty. She sure is pretty, isn't she? And the love between her and Zhivago just kind of happens. You know, they're sort of intrigued by each other. We see them exchanging glances, and Zhivago sees her a couple of times, and then they're in the war together, and they're at the hospital, and a few months go by, and, oh, I guess they're in love now. Oh, okay, cool. They fell in love during the cutaway. That's a problem. There's also the problem that characters appear and disappear throughout the film who are way, way, way more interesting than the lead protagonists. The best example of this is probably Pasha / Strelnikov, who has such a great, fascinating character arc. And is interesting whenever he's on screen, and he's barely even in the movie. And like you even say, when we were toward the end of the plot summary, like, he has such what sounds like a really interesting character resolution that we just sort of hear about. Mm-hmm. And also Klaus Kinski, who is in the movie for like 5 minutes and does more with his 5 minutes or whatever it is of screen time than almost anyone else does in the film, with much larger roles. And he's there and he's gone in the space of a few minutes. And he's so. And it's not bad that there are these interesting characters in the movie. It's just that they shouldn't be so much more interesting that they remind you of how dull the main characters are. And that's the problem. There's potential here for a good film, or even a great film. And there are things about this movie that I do genuinely admire, mostly in the technical aspects and certain shots. The potential is here for a really great movie. The Russian Revolution is a great setting. The romance, the turmoil of war and revolution, that this, the idea that they have in here, where the idealism of the revolution fades. You know, they lose the idealism when it turns out the revolutionaries kind of become the bad guys and are just as bad, if not worse, than the czars and the ruling class that was overthrown. Like, that's all great stuff in theory, but on screen in this film, I found most of it to just be a bore. And one of the trivia things I didn't mention is that this movie is the second most profitable MGM release ever. The first most profitable MGM release ever is Gone with the Wind. And I think that's appropriate, because like Gone with the Wind, Dr. Zhivago is technically impressive, even beautiful at times, but it's way too long, and it's not nearly as great as it seems to think it is, and as a lot of other people seem to think it is. So I'm going to say not recommend.
You're going to say not a classic?
I'm going to say not a classic.
Okay. So once again, we discover that Steve hates history and time.
I got shit to do. If you're going to ask me to sit still for 3.5 hours, you better have something for me.
I do agree with Steve on several of his points. Dr. Zhivago is a character. There isn't a whole lot there. We never really get to know him. I'm far more interested in Lara and her story than I am in his story.
Uh-huh.
We don't ever get to hear his poetry, so we never know how his poetry is. They make the mistake of building it up too much through exposition that nothing that is written could probably live up to it, right?
Right.
So we're shortchanged there, and that is supposed to be the insight into his soul, because that is severely personal. That's what the big complaint is that his
it's poetry too personal.
It's too personal, yeah. At a time when the state wanted poetry about the state, about the new worker, you know, uniting. The idea of self is supposed to take the back seat to the party, to the people, right? Oh, one of the reasons why his poetry gets banned. I agree that this is too long. I did not need to see him as a kid, and lots of stuff could have been tightened up. It is, again, a beautiful film. I resent the comparison to Gone with the Wind, because that is racist garbage, and this actually had interesting things in it. Here's one of the things that I appreciated about the film. Lean constantly, constantly subverting your expectations with something that makes you feel bad.
Yeah.
That's a risk that not a whole lot of filmmakers are willing to do, much less do it more than once in a movie. And he does it a lot. Okay, here's a good example. Kid slapping him. In another movie, he would have hugged him. Yay! Yeah. Woman running, getting baby on the train, woman getting on the train. Not only is the baby dead, it's not that woman's baby.
Yeah.
And she don't much care that the baby's dead. She says, oh, the baby's better off, it's in a better place. Which makes you think that maybe the lady used the dead baby to get on the train.
Yeah.
He denies you these things that you would expect from other movies, and he does it over and over again. And I don't get angry, I appreciate it, because I like being jarred. I like being told, oh, you feel this way? How about this? Just when you start thinking this person's a bad guy, how about this? It's nice about something. There's no bad guys. There's no good guys. It's all just awful. Everything's bad. And I agree. I would have loved to have followed Pavel's character. I would think that would have been cool, but that isn't the story they were telling, unfortunately, because that's not how the book was written. And yes, Zhivago is a cipher because he was a cipher in the book. It's a story about what's happening in Russia as told through his eyes. What I also appreciate is thank God they didn't do what a lot of these things do, which is put the characters in places at pivotal moments in history.
Yeah.
Like, they were at the Tsar's palace when the Tsar and all the guys got when they invaded the palace, or they were at some pivotal fight on the streets,
yeah.
Or, you know, a ton of shit. They were just, what kind of reinforced this was awful, and it was happening all over the place, and not everything was being, you know, not everyone's going to know about this small group of soldiers knocking over, rather than do what Forrest Gump does and a bunch of these other fucking movies do, and put them in pivotal moments in history, and rather have them be people that these things are happening to down the line, right?
Yeah.
These are the people who find out things after the fact. These are the people who... There's a scene that we skipped over in which he gets called in and he says, I hear there's typhus in the city. And they said, that is a lie. There is no typhus in the city. And he says, oh, good. And then they call him in. This guy, the same guy who told him there's no typhus, calls him in to take a look at this old man. And he's like, well, it's not typhus. He's dying of another disease, starvation.
Yeah, and you don't have that either, he says.
And you don't have that either.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff in here that I really like. I really appreciate it. I like this movie a lot more than I thought I was going to, because I'd never seen it before. I have an attention span, unlike Steve, so I can sit through this thing.
How dare you?
Granted, I'm only kidding. I love you to death. You know.
You don't have... It's. I can take it, man.
I know you can. That's why I said it. But even I agree that this thing needed to be tightened. It needed to be tightened a lot. And it could have kept all of the other stuff. Had they strengthened Yuri's character, I probably would have liked him more. But, I mean, he's a likable guy. I don't hate him. He doesn't do anything awful other than cheat on his wife. And even then, you can kind of half understand it because it's... One second. Yeah, what is it? What did you want? You interrupted the show. What did you want? What are you looking? No, you can do that later. Goodbye. Get the hell out. It's staying in. Anyway, I'm not combing through this already too long review of this movie and complaining about the length of the movie.
I'm not cutting shit out.
I'm not cutting anything out. Anyway, by the way, everybody, that was my daughter. Please leave complaints about how I treat her in the comment section. Anyway. No, I agree with Steve, but I like this movie a lot more than I thought I was going to. And so, am I going to say it's a classic? Sure. I mean, it's well shot, it's beautiful. Some people very much like the story. I thought the story was okay. I knew it was a framing device to tell a much larger story about what was going on in Russia, which I don't know if a whole lot of people knew about because it was kind of kept secret for a long time. But and I love that it had the one thing that I would think Steve would appreciate most out of anything. No happy ending. No happy ending for anybody.
And I'll tell you what, I didn't mention this in mine. I really loved the ending with the balalaika. I didn't mention that. That was one of the parts that I love the last
did
line.
You really?
I love the last line of Alex saying, then. Well, then it's a gift then. I thought that was perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was perfect, but I love the fact that he dies chasing after her in the street and she never sees him. She dies off somewhere in, you know, no one gets the happy, they don't get to hold each other in the street. That was his last, that was the last, everyone watching this movie is like, oh, they're going to get back together. They're going to meet in the street. And hug and kiss, and they're like, "What happened? Why is he? What he did? Why did he grab his chest? That why is he falling down? Where is she going? Wait! She died in a labor camp. What the hell?"
David Leeds steps into frame and just gives the audience the finger.
And then they cut to their, who may be their daughter, weeping into one of his poetry books. There's a lot here that I like. Even worse, rapist dude is the one that she thinks is her father. Who abandons her during a bombing. Isn't that great?
What a piece of shit.
I hope he died in that bombing, too. We never find out. We never get to find out.
No. He changed his name to Stalin and became the leader of the country.
So if you're looking for a happy, fun time movie, this is not a happy, fun time movie, everybody. No. This is not everybody. Everybody's happy at the end, and people get together, and oh boy, and we never see his other family ever again. We hope they're happy in France or whatever. Probably. We don't know because we never get to find out about that. But if you thought that this was going to be them embracing to a sunset or something, nope. He dies in the middle of the street on a gray road surrounded by strangers. And the last thing we see is her walking down this gigantic wall with a Stalin poster on it.
Yeah.
I love it. For all of those turns and changes and what we expect to happen, I like this movie. Now, will I recommend it to everybody? Sure, but you have to be patient. And hit that fast forward button, dudes. Don't worry. As soon as you start seeing people talk again, just go back 10 seconds. You can do it on Netflix. Just go back 10 seconds.
Yeah, they have a button for that. Yeah.
There's a button for it. You can skip his whole childhood. It doesn't really mean anything in the rest of the movie. No biggie. But, yeah.
In fact, if somebody wanted to put together like a 90-minute cut of this,
I would
watch the shit out of that.
Because, like I said, there's lots of really great bits of dialogue. There's really great characters. So that's it. I recommend, and I think it's a classic. Steve does not, and he does not, right?
That's correct.
Yay! And now it's time for us to do the not recommend recommends, because we have another split vote on this movie.
It's a split decision.
Steve, what are you going to recommend for our awesome people who agree with you to go watch to clean the Dr. Zhivago off of?
Just to prove that I don't necessarily have anything against long, slow-moving films.
Are you really feeling like you have to just... No, I don't. Like long movies.
I don't. But, but it just so happens that the movie I am recommending is it's not as long as Zhivago, but it's about 2.5 hours. And it's very quiet, very slow moving, takes its time, has a lot of subtle moments. It is, as Zhivago was a story about Russia, this is a film by one of the great Russian filmmakers. In fact, my favorite Russian filmmaker, Andrei Tarkovsky.
Oh.
And this was his last film. And it's a movie that I just saw for the first time last year. And I really, really loved it, and it was the first thought in my head when I thought of what to recommend for this show after watching Zhivago. So I am recommending, whether you like Dr. Zhivago or not, no matter which one of us you agreed with, if you haven't seen this film, you should check it out. It's called The Sacrifice.
Oh.
It's a very depressing movie.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's a very dark, depressing, kind of strange movie. Moves at a very deliberate pace, lots of characters. And it's just, and if you're familiar with Tarkovsky, a lot of his other films are very similar. He likes to work in this sort of mode where he takes his time and reveals things through quietly watching. He's very Kubrickian in a way, but you're, I think you get closer to his characters than you do to most of Kubrick's characters. But yeah, it was his final film. It was, by this point in his life, he had left the Soviet Union. He was an expat living in Sweden, and that's where this film was made. It wound up being his final film. He died shortly after finishing it. And it is the story of a family that find themselves quite possibly dealing with the end of the world. Mm-hmm. None of them saw it coming, but that's kind of you could draw a parallel to Zhivago there too, because like the characters of Zhivago, who sort of are swept up in the Russian Revolution without really being close to any of the important events, we see a possible like devastating nuclear war talked about and perhaps happening in the larger world, but we see it through the eyes of this family in this country house who don't know any more about what's going on than we do. They just hear reports and they're sort of like, well, what do we do now?
Right.
And it's a really, really terrific film. So that is my recommendation. The final film of the great Andrei Tarkovsky, The Sacrifice.
Hey! Now, as you guys know, I like to not recommend a film from the same year as the movie that we just reviewed, and it's 1965. And the movie that I'm not going to recommend, a lot of people might disagree with me because it supposedly comes from a master.
Ooh.
But it's a master who I've told everyone on this show I don't like a whole lot. And this really cements one of the reasons why I don't like him. The movie stars Laurence Olivier.
Oh.
In blackface.
Uh-oh.
With a made-up accent.
Uh-oh.
In his version of Othello.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So, how do I explain to you what's wrong with this version of Othello? Maybe it's because he's in blackface, everybody. Maybe that's what it is. At a time where we knew for a fact that wasn't cool anymore.
Yeah, we knew by the 60s that we shouldn't be doing that shit.
It's 1965, yeah. Steve. What's happening in the South in the United States?
Oh, wasn't there like a big transformational civil rights movement going on?
Yeah. Something like that. Hmm. But this Whitey McWhiterson from England decided, I can only play Othello. And so he slathered himself up with what I near can tell is jet black face paint and then put on a fake accent and performed Othello. Now, some people might like this version. I do not. Not just for the blackface, but because I just can't stand Laurence Olivier. I don't. There are other good actors and actresses in it. Maggie Smith is in this. Derek Jacobi is in this. They're good.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie is like, oh, you just filmed a stage play. Great. And you put it, and then you're wearing black. Why did you do that? Pauline Kael loved the movie, and her only complaint was that no one gave him enough money to be able to make a really big production out of it, like Dr. Zhivago, right?
Right.
And she wanted this huge, sprawling thing, but it will still boil down to white dude who knows black actors playing a black guy by putting blackface on. It's not good. Guys,
no.
It's not good. If you want to watch a good version of Othello... Has there been one?
There aren't any.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Did probably the most the least problematic one. Okay, let's cast an actual black actor.
Yeah,
what a crazy idea.
It hasn't been remounted. It hasn't been done as a movie lately. So yeah, don't, just don't. I love Shakespeare, but no.
Yeah, just don't.
Larry Oliver, go away. Well, okay.
Well, he's dead now.
He's dead now, and now you know what time it is, Steve.
Is it time for a terrible choice?
No.
That's right. We're doing
what we did last time.
We're doing viewer's choice for next
time,
aren't
we? We made the listeners. I don't know what they've been watching. We made the listeners make a terrible choice. They wrote in with their suggestions. We didn't get a whole lot of them, but we definitely got a winner.
Oh, boy.
And I would like to thank the people on Patreon who sent in their votes. Kira, I hope I'm saying your name right, Kira Leach. Fluffy Foxy Boy, Connie Walker, Daniel Baggett, St. Swibbins, and Atticus Blake all sent in their suggestions, and there are some movies in there that I definitely want to pick up and do later on.
Cool.
Considering my background and how much I love puppets and puppetry, how we've never done a Muppet movie or The Great Muppet Caper is beyond me.
Oh, we definitely got to do that, yeah.
Much less The Dark Crystal.
Oh, absolutely.
Daniel Baggett said MASH. MASH was thrown in there.
That's a good suggestion.
One just for you, Steve. Fiddler on the Roof is in there.
Oh, boy.
I know you'd love it.
I love musicals.
And A Knight's Tale, which I think is interesting, because that person actually decided, hey, this is a movie we're never ever going to get. But unfortunately, it's only one vote, and I can't do the one vote, but I want to mention it, because it's an interesting suggestion, and I liked it. But guess what won, Steve? Guess what won?
What won?
The movie that we're going to review next, and this is Listener's Choice.
Oh, boy.
Is a little story about a guy.
Okay.
Goes to another planet.
I see.
And the people on that planet decide that he's like a god guy.
Interesting.
And he rides a big worm. And there's a lot of gross stuff in it.
I see.
And weird internal monologues that we can hear. And it's directed by flat out one of our greatest filmmakers of the last 50 years. Would you not agree, Steve?
I would completely agree.
The movie we're going to review next time is the sci-fi epic that was going to trump Star Wars somehow. Dune.
Yeah.
That
doesn't really surprise me. I know a lot of people have suggested that.
A lot of people have been demanding Dune.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it. We're going to do Dune.
Awesome.
Dune is next. You may live to regret that, but we're doing Dune.
I'll see anything with Kyle MacLachlan.
Oh, golly. Really?
Pretty much.
There's a lot of... the guy who plays Thufir Hawat. I love that actor. I love him. And he appears in a lot of David Lynch's movies.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name right now. Also, Thufir Hawat from that movie looks a lot like Fundy Monster.
So there's a personal connection.
Uh-huh. I would like to thank Creationist Cat for pointing that out to me. Anyway, that's it, guys. Dude, next time, dude. Yay, we're done. We're done. Never. We're not doing another Lean film for another 3 years. I'm not going to do another Lean film.
Yeah.
The next, there's only one real one left, and that's Bridge Over the River Kwai. Yeah. And I think if I did that right away, Steve would kill me or kill himself, or I don't know what he would do. But
we need to have We need to have a couple of shorter films in between.
Is this you pushing to finally do the Buster Keaton short film?
That might be too short, but that's not even an hour long. I don't know if we could get a whole show out of that. But.
Well, we barely, I mean, come on. Dracula was barely an hour.
That's true. Dracula was not even 70 minutes or something.
No, Frankenstein was a little bit more than an hour. Those old-timey movies, they were like, no, let's get this out. We're scaring too many people.
Get on with it.
Putting them to sleep. Anyway, that's it for late seating. This has been Jason Harding, and go see a movie this week.
And this has been Steve Shives. Who are you to refuse my sugar?
Steve, I thought we weren't going to have these kinds of arguments.
I brought you sugar. Now you take this sugar from me. This is for you and for your kids.
You won't tell me what sugar means.
I brought you some loose sugar in my pocket. It's right here.
I don't want loose sugar.
I got it for you. I stole it from the sugar factory.
Believe me, I can get sugar right down at the store.
Not like this.
No, I don't need your lint-riddled...
This is good sugar.
...pocket sugar.
You run it through a sieve, all the lint and all the dirt gets out of it.
And all the sugar, what are you talking about?
You put it in your coffee, the sugar... Look, the sugar dissolves all the little pebbles and shit, just goes right to the bottom of the cup.
It's not the pebbles, I can identify those. It's the stuff I can't identify.
Do you think you're too... are you too good? You're too good
for
to take my sugar?
For your pocket sugar? I can unequivocally say yes, I am too good for your pocket sugar.
I put that sugar in my pocket to bring to you.
You fooled me once with your pocket ravioli. I'm not falling for it again.
I still say you should have taken that.
I did take it, and I broke a tooth on whatever was in there. I'm not eating. No, stop offering me your pocket food.
All right, fine. Okay, well, look, I brought you a pocket egg salad sandwich. Would you take that?
How long has it been warm in your pants pocket?
It's been there since this morning. I picked it up on my way into the city.
Great. So you just basically offered me some pocket botulism.
It was already it was one of those pre-made ones that they sell at the gas station.
Oh God! Please just say goodbye. Oh, please say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Get that away from me.
It's good.
It's not. It's the opposite.
Just try it.
No.
Okay.
Stop it.
Well, I'm gonna eat it.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Late Seating is a Let Me Listen podcast production featuring Steve Shives and Jason Harding. Produced by Jason Harding. Theme music, Rollin' at Five, composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more Let Me Listen podcast productions at our website at www.letmelistenpodcast.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or just about anywhere you download podcasts. Late Seating is a listener-supported podcast. If you would like to support Late Seating or any of the other Let Me Listen productions for as little as $1 a month, please visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/letmelisten. And thanks for listening.